Welcome to the Issue Is podcast in a weird week in California politics. Not only did we get Caitlyn Jenner's debut on the Sean Hannity show and all of the drama that came after that, but John Cox, the Republican who was second place last time around in the governor's race, came out with a 1,000-pound bear named Tag, who's in the Screen Actors Guild, and stood behind him and was essentially doing tricks while he spoke. He had a big ad campaign, $5 million buy, describing himself as the Beast, describing Gavin Newsom as a beauty, says he's a pretty boy. Got a lot of attention. And so this week, our guest is John Cox, who's in the middle of all of that. We also talk with Carla Marinucci from Politico, who was there for the bear debut. With us, Areva Martin, attorney, and Joel Pollack from Breitbart. Both Areva and Joel were here for our first ever panel 3 years ago this week. This is our anniversary show. So thank you to everybody who's been there us from the beginning. John Cox was with us on our second week when he was running for governor. He's running for governor again. And this is a week unlike any we've seen before. So we begin with John Cox and talking about what else? The bear.
John Cox is back with us, or should I say, the Beast is back. Beast, welcome to The Issue Is.
I'm the nicest, friendliest beast, though, Alex. Remember that,
too. All right. I know you want to talk policy, and there are serious issues to get to, and we will get to
them. There are.
But let's start with that bear. Walk me through the thought process where you decided, I want a 1,000-pound bear by my side.
It's a symbol, Alex, of the beastly changes we're going to need to make in this state. Listen, you know, we've had celebrities, we've had politicians, and the quality of life in this state continues to go down, you know, with the tax burden, the lack of water, the lack of electricity, the schools, our businesses shut down, the homelessness epidemic, all of these problems. So the bear is there as a symbol. I think it's a wonderful animal, by the way. It's well taken care of. We should all have as wonderful a life as this bear. But it's a symbol, and it's a serious symbol, Alex. It's about the fact that we're going to have to make big, beastly, hard changes to the way that we're doing business in this state. It's also a symbol of the fact that the voters are starting to wake up from their hibernation. Mm. You know, they keep electing these career politicians, and then they wonder why quality of life doesn't benefit. You know, look what happened in November, Alex. They defeated rent control. They defeated a huge tax increase. They defeated the effort to restrict freelance workers and Uber and Lyft. They really started to wake up from their hibernation. Mm. And I think that that's also what they're doing with this recall. They've really had it hit home to them that who they elect, Alex, makes a difference in their quality of life. It means the difference about whether they get a job or not. It means a difference about whether they're going to be able to save money and not pay taxes at the high rate they are, but they're going to have money for their kids' education. It makes a difference that their kids are even in school, learning in front of a teacher. They can see the difference that Florida has versus California, and they say to themselves, why? Why was California so different? Why were so many small businesses locked out and shut down? Why are our kids not going to school? And they know the difference is leadership. It's the difference between running the state for the unions or the big bosses or the special interests at the French Laundry, or running the state for them, for the voters. And I think that's what the bear is intended to signify, that they've got to be tough and they've got to awaken from their hibernation.
So the bear was supposed to appear with you the rest of the week, and then it only appeared for that one day. Why just the one day?
Well, because the campaign is not about the bear. It's a symbol of the beastly changes. We're going to have it again. I think we'll have it next week. Oh, yeah. But we're not going to have it all the time. You know, first of all, it's expensive. You know, it takes a lot of care. We have to, by the way, Alex, we have to have somebody, which is fine. We have to have somebody from animal rights there to make sure it's not being mistreated. And it was not being mistreated. It was being very well treated.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's a symbol. And let me tell you, it's worked. People are paying attention, Alex, and that's what I want. We have got to get the voters to pay attention that their quality of life depends upon who they elect and who they vote for. And that's the essential message of the whole campaign and the recall, for that matter.
So there was this big ad buy, over $5 million for this ad out with the theme Beauty and the Beast. I'm sure a lot of our viewers have seen it, but here's part of it.
We chose pretty over accomplished.
Pretty boy, pretty boy.
We chose beauty over brains. This ain't working. We need to choose someone who can fix this place. John Cox was born with nothing. Never knew his dad. He started this campaign with his own money, trying to fix this place.
So is your argument that Governor Newsom is just too handsome to be governor? Is being good-looking a disqualifier?
No. The argument is that he's all about personal ambition, and which he is. I mean, that's widely acknowledged.
Are you not, though?
He wants to.
I mean, aren't all politicians for personal ambition?
Absolutely not, Alex. Listen, this is costing me money. This is taking time away from my family and my businesses, which I'm happy to do because I want to fix this state. I don't have any ambitions about being president. I don't have any ambitions about, you know, moving up the political ladder. I don't have any ambitions about making money from this, like writing a book or something like that. If I write a book, it's to communicate my ideas, and I'm not making any money from it. My mission here is to make sure that, you know, I'm 65 years old. I want my life to be about what I did to help other people. Mr. Newsom, you know, was put in business by the Getty billionaires. He's connected to the Brown and Pelosi families. He's part of this whole elite group that really has been governing California and watching it descend all the way down. And that's got to be reversed, Alex. And it's not going to be reversed by somebody with milquetoast ideas. It's got to be a beast.
But didn't you literally run for president?
Well, because I was upset about George W. Bush's mismanagement and corruption. Let me tell you, that was legion, and that's why I did that. So every race that I've ever run, Alex, it's about going after people who are corrupt. I ran in Chicago for the same reasons, corruption. I can't stand corruption. And as you know, by the way, I'm calling out Republican as well as Democrat corruption.
Right.
I'm going to make sure that people trust their leaders and make sure that we have integrity in leadership, and I'm going to be a beast when it comes to corruption.
Well, let me just ask one more question about that beast branding, because you've been on this show literally since week two, one of our more frequent guests, one of the nicest guys we've ever had on the show. And that's
Thank
meant
you.
As a compliment, not as a negative thing.
Thank you.
I don't think of you as a beast. I think of you as a handsome guy, a nice guy who just has different policy views from Governor Newsom. You know, where does that phrase beast, where does that come from?
Because we have to be a beast about corruption and about misspending, about budgetary problems. Listen, Alex, the people of this state are way overtaxed, and they know that government is wasting money. You can talk to my business associates and my investors. They will tell you I am a beast when it comes to anybody wasting money or using money inefficiently. And I can't wait to get my hands around this budget and basically say, hey, we're not going to spend that to do that. We're going to make sure the money is spent wisely and efficiently because the voters work hard for that money, and we're not going to have them see it wasted like on a bullet train to nowhere. If we should do a bullet train, we should have done one between Los Angeles and Vegas. It would have been full every day. It would have made a profit. Putting it in the Central Valley where a few people are going to ride it is stupid and a waste of money. I believe in high-speed rail, but that's just one example. We got to build reservoirs. We got to build desalination. We got to do a lot of important things to make sure that people's quality of life is better.
And we should have had Vegas hotels pay for it instead of taxpayers, and they probably would have been thrilled to. But that's a whole nother.
That would have been wonderful. That would have been a great idea. Yeah. How about we put solar panels on top of the aqueducts and generate solar energy at the same time we're generating water? Good idea.
So, okay, from a policy perspective, though, most important policy difference between you and Governor Newsom, most important difference, you're in office versus him.
I would have the kids in school right now. My kids, my nephews have been going to school in Orlando full time since last August. This is all about politics. It's all about using the children as a pawn between the union bosses and the politicians. I think the teachers want to go back to work, most of them anyway. but we need to get these kids in a classroom. And it's the communities of color. It's the people at the lower ends of the economic spectrum that don't have that opportunity. Gavin Newsom's kids, the Pretty Boys kids, are going to school. They're going to be just fine. It's all the rest of the kids that are stuck looking at Zoom cameras and, you know, not having a teacher.
He would say that you have limited power as governor on that front because school districts really are in charge. And what specifically are you supposed to do as the governor? What do you say to that?
Look at the governors all across the nation who have gotten their kids back in school. It's the governors in the big union boss dominated states like New York and California that haven't gotten their kids back in school. But you look around the country, they're in school and they're in front of a teacher, and that is so important.
But you're still going to have to deal with the unions, right? I mean, even if you become governor, yeah.
Of course. But, you know, listen, I rose and made a success in my life because of my mom, she was a school teacher, and the great education. We've got to make sure that these dollars go into the classroom, that they go to the teachers, that they don't go to administrators, and that we get those kids back in the schools and get them learning so that they can become productive people later in life like I was. And that's you know, got to happen. And we also have to do the same with people out living on the streets. It is just horrendous to have people living on the streets. We've got to treat their illness. We've got to treat their addictions, get them back into society. And that's compassionate.
Well, so you're not only running, you're actually not even running against Governor Newsom. You're running against the GOP field right now when it comes to the recall. What do you make of the GOP field? What do you make of Caitlyn Jenner, Kevin Faulkner?
This is going to be me against the pretty boy, the beast against the pretty boy. It's not listen, we've had career politicians like Mr. Faulkner. We've had celebrities like Ms. Jenner. They haven't worked. They haven't gotten the job done. There's dozens of states, by the way, Alex, including blue states like Maryland and Massachusetts, that have elected business guys, and they're popular. So, and why are they popular? Because they focus on fixing the problems and not politics. I'm not going to get involved in the political battles, the partisan fights. People are sick of that. They want somebody who's going to say, here's how we get from point A to point B. What's the fastest way to improve education? Electricity, water, homelessness, housing, the fire prevention. How can we best fix these issues? Let's elect that guy.
But voters had the chance to elect you last time, and you lost by 24 points. And there are some,
they didn't know who I was,
in your party that say, you know, it's time to try something new. You had your shot. What do you say to them?
I got millions of votes, and I'm starting with that base and working upwards. Listen, I wasn't a household name. I wasn't a career politician like Mr. Newsom. I wasn't a celebrity. People had to take some time to get to know me. Still, I got almost 5 million people to vote for me, and I think I'm going to start with that base this time. And people will know that I'm not in this for myself. I'm not in this to sell a book or give speeches or anything like that. I've done well enough. I'm in this to fix California and make it good for my 16-year-old daughter, for everybody's children, so that we have a functional state, so that we can actually enjoy an affordable and wonderful life here. This is a wonderful place to live, Alex. The weather is fantastic, but we've got to make sure that people can afford to live here.
Back during that campaign, we talked a lot about your mom. And on this Mother's Day weekend, I think it's worth bringing that up again and talking about your mom and maybe sharing with viewers and voters how she influenced you.
Oh, my God. You know, Alex, as I've gotten older, I wish I'd have treated my mother so much better. I was like a typical guy, I guess. I went on, I got married, and I had devoted myself to my wife. And I still talk to my mom, but I didn't talk to her enough. You know, she was a rock. My real father left her holding the bag, didn't take responsibility. That was horrendous when I look back on it. And she was strong. She was a rock, and she cared about people. You know, she could have made a lot of money as something other than a teacher. I think she could have written books and made a lot more money and maybe had a more enjoyable life. But she chose to go back to the school that she went to on the south side of Chicago to teach these kids, mostly African American, and to get them into a love of reading. She went back and sacrificed in many ways because she wanted to help those kids. Well, you know what? you know, she also, as you might remember, I told you, she went down to Chile in the 40s to teach, you know, poor itinerant, you know, Chilean kids how to read and write English. This is a woman who felt that it was important in her life to help others. And my God, if what I'm doing today is something that is a tribute to her, I hope she's looking down and believes that I'm doing the right thing for her. And, you know, I wish I'd have treated her so much better when she was alive. And I hope every child, every boy out there especially feels that way as well.
Our thanks to John Cox. Next up, a great panel, Carla Marinucci, the author of the California Political Playbook Every Day, Areva Martin, attorney, activist, author, founder of the Special Needs Network, and Joel Pollack, a senior editor at Breitbart. All of them talking about Caitlyn Jenner. We're going to talk about Facebook later, but let's begin by talking about Caitlyn Jenner, and later we'll talk about John Cox. Here we go.
Welcome all, Joel. Congratulations on being such a fast writer. Carla, let's start with you. Your assessments of that Caitlyn Jenner interview.
Well, I mean, look, the reality star got a reality check this week on what it's like to run for public office in California. This is the big show. And she backed into it this week with that interview with Sean Hannity. You know, she did embrace Trump. She embraced the wall. She kind of went MAGA on the whole issue of immigration. But that didn't really make the news as much as that viral comment on the private airplane hangar friend who wanted to leave because he couldn't stand looking at homeless people anymore. It was one of those sort of let them eat cake moments in which she may have out-Gavined Gavin on the French Laundry. And, you know, the real question is, did she take away the big hammer that the Republicans have been using against Gavin, that French Laundry incident? Did she seem out of touch? I think that she's going to have to get past this one, Alex, and fill out the real details of her campaign. She didn't do it on the Hannity show. And she's, you know, it's not going to be keeping up with the Kardashians. She's going to have to answer from people like you, sit down with people like you and answer details about how she's going to run the state. That is a very big lift for her ahead.
Well, thank you for the plug. And we have invited Caitlyn Jenner on the show, and we hope that she'll join us next week. But Joel, I know you have a different take on this and think that the mainstream media may be missing the mark here.
Well, I think they're missing the mark in one respect and perhaps hitting it in another. They're missing it in the sense that the airplane hangar comment is a bit out of context. I mean, you have the co-founder of Black Lives Matter, Patrice Cannecoulores, also owning an airplane hangar in Georgia, one of her many real estate purchases. And I think Caitlyn Jenner's point, which again was taken out of context, was that homeless people and tent cities are proliferating all over California. And whereas wealthy people used to be able to ignore it, it's now in wealthy neighborhoods here in Los Angeles and elsewhere. So it's becoming a problem that really is something people are very concerned about, not just because it's unsightly, but because people feel unsafe. But where I think the criticism might be accurate, where Caitlyn Jenner needs to hone her message, is the major issues driving Republican voters right now in California. They include the shutdowns, they include immigration, but those law and order issues, public safety, school opening, school closures, we didn't hear enough of the hammer really being brought to those issues. And I think the problem Jenner faces is that there are so many Republican candidates. You spoke to John Cox. There are others in the race. And unless you can unify behind one person, you're not going to beat Gavin Newsom. Now, he's not on that particular ballot question, but he's going to be able to unite the entire Democratic Party behind him. And you got to have somebody strong out there. Otherwise, you're not going to get enough people to the polls.
What'd you make of this whole thing, the Caitlyn Jenner launch, Areva? We know you're not a supporter of the Republican Party, but what did you make of the launch?
Yeah, I thought it was an out of touch, you know, it's kind of one of those moments where there's another out of touch celebrity talking about stepping over homeless people. You know, I work with marginalized populations throughout Southern California. So I'm dealing with people who are trying to put food on the table, wondering, you know, where their next paycheck is coming from, how they're going to afford housing in the state of California, how they afford transportation. So to hear someone talking about, you know, their friend with a private hangar and stepping over homeless people, I thought was an incredibly insensitive statement and just shows how unprepared Jenner is for the big stage. This is California with a very diverse population. And if she has any chance of winning, she's got to speak to people like the people like me, African-American. She's got to speak to Latino. She's got to speak to Asian. She's got to speak to marginalized populations. And nothing in that interview spoke to any of those demographics.
Meanwhile, John Cox, who was just on the show before you guys with the big unveiling of the bear this week. Carla, you were there. You got to meet the bear. In person. What did you think about that whole experience? Does that work? Is that an effective PR strategy?
I mean, look, I've been covering California politics for a long time. I got to tell you, Alex, this ranks up there with one of the weirder moments I've ever witnessed. I mean, 1,000-pound bear roaming around untethered around the press corps. I mean, I think a lot of people would probably like that idea. But the fact is, John Cox's message kind of got bigfooted in this whole event. I mean, he's spending $5 million on a new spot that kind of portrays him as the beast to Gavin Newsom's pretty boy, the beauty. It's Beauty and the Beast theme. And that was clever. And that's a lot of money to be putting into it. But the bottom line is, this is a guy who's run for office, you know, 5 or 6 times already. He's going to have to make a serious play here. And up against a reality show star like Caitlyn Jenner, he's got a challenge. He went around the state without the bear after that event and found himself alone with a couple of reporters. So his message has got to be honed, and he's got to figure out how to make that stick. I think your scoop with him about going out with the bear next week is interesting because he got a lot of blowback from animal rights groups. And I think we can expect to hear more from them. That may turn into the big moment for him, actually.
Joel, you're more in touch with Republican voters than anybody else on this panel. Does this work? Is there an appetite for John Cox?
Well, in a crowded field, as I said before, with so many candidates, these sorts of gimmicks do tend to work, even if people don't like them. Even if there are animal rights activists who are upset about the bear, he's clearly getting a lot of attention. And it's how you have to compete, I think, with a reality TV star. So hats off to him. The problem he faces is that he ran last time and finished well behind Gavin Newsom. So you're going to have to see some enthusiasm behind one of these candidates. And unless he's got another circus animal to bring to the race, I don't know if you're going to see that.
So one person who hasn't brought out a giant elephant or tiger or anything else is Kevin Faulkner, who hasn't gotten that much attention this week, Areva, without, you know, lighting his hair on fire. His strategy is basically, look, these are serious issues. This shouldn't be a sideshow. I'm trying to make that point. Does that work in a state as big and complicated and hard to get to as California?
Well, I'd like to think that Kevin's approach to this race is the appropriate approach. Look, this is serious business. So gimmicks like bears and, you know, sitting in private airplane hangars obviously is not going to win you the governor's office in a state like California. Problem is, Kevin is not going to win the governorship either. Gavin Newsom has made some missteps, no doubt about it. But overwhelmingly, Californians do not want to recall Gavin Newsom. Gavin Newsom has done an outstanding job when you look at where we are with respect to COVID positivity rates. When you look at vaccinations in the state of California, the state is about to reopen. And although people haven't been, you know, pleased with everything that he's done over the last year, overwhelmingly, people are pretty satisfied. So none of these Republicans really have a real chance of beating Gavin Newsom. So you can bring out a bear, you can sit in a private airplane hangar, you can do whatever you want, you know, like you said, to hang from a tightrope. But the reality is you're not going to beat Gavin Newsom in the state of California. That's kind of the fact. That's the reality.
Real quickly to wrap this segment up, Joel, who is the strongest Republican in your view?
The strongest Republican may be someone who's not running, and that would be Richard Grenell. He is the former acting director of national intelligence. He was very widely praised for his job as U.S. ambassador to Germany, and he's also a member of the LGBTQ community. So he really has a strong presence, but he right now is sitting this one out. He is polling even with Caitlyn Jenner in a recent poll that came out from SurveyUSA, and they're both a little bit behind John Cox, but it's very interesting that he's basically polling in second place, but he's not in the race. If he were to get in, that might change things.
All right, our panel returns. When we come back, we're going to be talking about the love running out between President Trump and Facebook. President Trump still not on Facebook after the company's independent review board agreed with Mark Zuckerberg's initial decision to kick the president off the site after the January 6th insurrection. But They want Facebook to provide more clear standards and review all of this again in a few months. Let's talk about this with our panel, Carla Marinucci of Politico, attorney Reva Martin. But let's start with Breitbart's Joel Pollack. Joel, your reaction to that move by Facebook. Is this fair?
No, it's ridiculous. And the problem that Facebook and Twitter and these other social media companies are running into is they're starting to behave like governments. They control so much of the public sphere. They really ought to allow people to express themselves, but they are so clearly on one side of the political divide and using their immense power to censor alternative points of view that this is really starting to get people upset. And it's not just the president who's being dropped from Facebook. It's pro-life news sites like LifeSite News, which was dropped this week. People who simply share stories that Facebook doesn't like get dropped. This is not how we want our public discourse to happen, and there's going to have to be some kind of intervention. One thing you're hearing from Trump supporters this week, interestingly, is a sense of regret that Trump didn't do more to rein in the social media giants when he had the chance. So I think what you're going to see going forward is that future Republican candidates will be asked by Republican primary voters what they plan to do about Facebook, Twitter, and the others.
Areva, from a legal perspective, what do you make of this?
Well, you have a First Amendment right, by no doubt about that, but you don't have a First Amendment right to be on Facebook. That's not in the Constitution. So all this talk about somehow Donald Trump being denied his First Amendment rights is just, you know, a big distraction. Obviously, he has so many other opportunities to get his message out, to speak freely. He's on Fox News regularly. He's on other media outlets. So I think this is a lot to do about nothing. He violated the community standards set by Facebook, and he's no better than anyone else. If you violate the standards, you get penalized. He incited violence by some of his posts on the site, and they deemed them inappropriate and dangerous. So if you want to be on the site, abide by the rules. And he just refuses to abide by any rules because he thinks he's above the law in terms of the criminal justice system and the rules that have been set by Facebook. So he has to live with the consequences because he decided to make the choice to violate the standards. So I say this was a great decision by this board, and we just should move on. Let him go on Fox News, go wherever he chooses, and he can still exercise his First Amendment right, but he just can't do it on Facebook.
Joel, your response.
Well, I think one of the things the board pointed out is that there are no standards that he was actually deemed to have violated. They didn't say that he violated a particular rule. That's what's confusing about it. That's why Facebook has to come back in 6 months and explain what it's going to do with Trump. I think the problem is that the standards seem to shift all the time. And Twitter also keeps changing its terms of service. So if there's a set of standards and you participate in the forum and everybody understands the rules, okay, you can make the argument, you know, if you violate the rules, you get kicked off. I think in this case, it was not clear what Trump did to violate the standards. And I think that's what people are concerned about.
Carla, as a California political reporter, Silicon Valley so powerful in this state. Now you got Democrats in charge in Washington and having to regulate Silicon Valley. Talk about some of the politics at play here.
Well, I think, look, I mean, we know with this decision this week that Mark Zuckerberg cannot kick the can down the road and escape responsibility for calling the shots on this one. And I think both Democrats and Republicans are watching that very, very closely. Big tech, not popular, I think, on both sides. But the fact is that, you know, what Facebook does has huge implications ahead, for, I think, for American politics, the 2024 election. And what happens if Trump's eventual return comes back? I got to say, in some respects, some of these Republicans are a bit hypocritical in claiming they're banned from big tech when, say, Josh Hawley, the Missouri senator, is out there pitching his book about how bad big tech is on Amazon and on his iPhone every day. So, you know, it's the enemy, yes, but it's one they embrace.
All right, before we go to break, we want to take a moment to acknowledge this Mother's Day weekend. I want to begin with my mom, Crystal, the heart and soul of my life and the heart and soul of this show. I love her. And go Dodgers, by the way. Carla, this is a throwback picture you want to show us. Tell us a little bit about it.
I mean, this shows what moms do in grounding their family. I'm from a family of Sicilian immigrants. This is our family at our Italian-American bakery in Jersey City, where my mom gave me the motto that has guided my life straight from the movie The Godfather: leave the gun, take the cannoli. And I've been doing it ever since.
And that is little Carla there was in the middle of that with her mom and her grandmother.
Choices.
Very cool. Areva, we've got a photo of your son, who is the inspiration for the Special Needs Network.
Yeah, first I got to say, Carl, I love your mom and I love that movie. So great picture. Yeah, that's my son, Marty. My son, Marty, is on the autism spectrum and he is my life. He's my inspiration. I have two other daughters, so I don't want to forget them on this Mother's Day. And I was raised by three amazing women, my biological mother, my grandmother, and my godmother. So a big shout out to grandmothers and godmothers who are raising kids because they play such an important role in so many lives, particularly in Black and brown communities. They are the heart and soul of our family. So and, big shout out to all of those.
And Joel, we have a photo of the loves of your life.
This is my wife, who, as you can see, is the mother of two and also expecting a third mom-to-be in a few months. And I'd also like to acknowledge my own mom, Naomi, and my grandmother, Esther, 100 years young, and my mother-in-law, Rhoda, who lives with us and is so helpful and so much fun.
Wow. And mazel tov to you on the new baby.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you for being our first guest on our first show.
Honored to be here. Thanks for having me.
All right, let's talk about one of the... 3 years ago this week, The Issue Is debuted with then-Lieutenant Governor Gavin Newsom, and we also had Adam Schiff was with us as well. Schiff making the argument at the time that it was not the right time for Democrats to push impeachment in the House. How about that? Well, also on that week, let's show you the panel that we had. Dan Schnur was with us, along with Areva Martin, and Joel Pollack. Dan, unfortunately, had a prior commitment, couldn't be with us this week, but Joel and Areva are back with us, along with another friend of the show, Carla Marinucci. And on our anniversary, I just wanted to thank each of you for your support of the show over the years. Areva, you've literally been here since week one. You've been one of our most frequent guests. Thank you for everything.
Oh, thank you for bringing such a diverse show with so many amazing guests that covers so many critical issues to the Southern California viewers. I've been honored to be a part of this show and to walk with you on this super exciting journey. So good luck and congratulations.
Thank you very much. And Joel, you know, we love having a diversity of views for a respectful debate, and I think you really epitomize that. So thank you for that.
Well, thank you. And you are a real gentleman, not just on the air, but off the air. I think anyone who follows you on Instagram or Twitter, your social media, really understands you engage with people from a variety of backgrounds in a very respectful and civil way. It's so rare nowadays. So thank you for that.
And thank you. And Carla, you are the best reporter in this state and you make our show smarter.
You know, thanks to this great show, you are out there competing with us every day in those political scrums. You are making my life a living hell, Alex, but we love you.
Let's end on that note. We are excited for the next 3 years. Thank you all for watching. And the biggest thanks
baby.
Goes to our, but yeah, thank you. There we go. Yeah, baby.
Our thanks to Carla and Areva and Joel, and our thanks to you for listening, and a special thanks to those of you who have been with us from the beginning. Next week, Secretary Pete Buttigieg, who was on our show so often as Mayor Pete, will be on as Secretary Pete for the first time, and who knows, maybe we'll have Caitlyn Jenner. We'll see. Thanks again. Please connect with me in social media. Until next time, I'm Alex Michelson. See you later.